Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Here we are again on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Welcome. It's great to have you along. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to the good conversations we have each and every day here. And today will be no exception. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, before we jump in today, I should just remind people, hopefully they've already checked it out online and signed up for The Real Heaven, what the Bible actually says. It's an MP3 album message series from Chip Ingram, and it's available during the month of April on our website.
First thing you see on our webpage at myfaithradio.com, it's right there. Click on that, and it'll take you to the Living on the Edge page where you can get this free resource.
It's a new book from Chip, and you heard him on here not long ago here on Connecting Faith as we talked about The Real Heaven, what the Bible actually says. But you'll be able to sign up, take advantage of the special offer to get that message series free, and you sign up online at myfaithradio.com.
And if you're not taking care of yourself, you might find yourself in heaven sooner than later.
That's right. I thought we'd talk about Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake. That's the title of one of the books that we want to reference today. So, I mean, it's that kind of that clever radio. You can't put a price on
just
that.
Just like
really.
We planned it in our three-hour production meeting, right?
Speaking of putting a price on it, we do have our spring fundraiser next week. So,
that's right.
Hopefully you'll not take this into account when you make your pledge and give more generously than what that was worth. But we want to talk with Lisa Marone. She's back with us. You hear Lisa regularly on the morning show with Dr. Bill Meyer, and I just so appreciate her great insight and regular contribution to our good health. She's a physical therapist, a professor, author of a number of books, and speaker who encourages people to get healthy for heaven's sake, which was the title of her most recent book, Seven Steps to Living Strong, Loving God and Serving Others. We're going to talk about a couple of her other books today because it's World Health Day today. And one of the books she's written is called Diabetes, Are You at Risk? And another one, Overcoming Overeating. It's not what you eat, it's what eats you. World Health Day is something sponsored by the World Health Organization, the UN, and they are focusing today on beating diabetes. And it is a major health concern, and that maybe you know someone or have dealt with that or are concerned about it. We're going to find out more about it. So let's welcome Lisa to the broadcast. Lisa, thanks for coming back to us on Connecting Faith.
Great to be with you. What an important topic we're talking about today.
Yeah, the World Health Organization, I'm sure they can focus on any number of diseases on a day like today. But why diabetes? What is it about this disease that makes it so significant and something we need to pay attention to?
I believe what's going on is it's catching everybody by surprise how quickly the rate of diabetes is escalating among adults and now among children. And it's really caught us by surprise. Just a number of years ago when I published Diabetes, Are You at Risk?, 1 in 3 adults were at risk. And now a study came out, Neil, in September that showed that 1 out of every 2 adults over the age of 20 had prediabetes or diabetes right now. So we're talking about 50% of the population that's having trouble controlling their blood sugar. So that's a pretty crazy epidemic. That's in the United States, and as the World Health Organization has shown us, it's a worldwide issue now.
Well, I guess we want to find out why, but maybe we need to define what we're talking about. What is diabetes?
Well, there's 2 types of diabetes primarily. There's type 1 diabetes, which is really an autoimmune disease. It's something that is typically onset in early childhood. The body actually attacks its pancreas, which produces the hormone insulin, which helps to regulate our blood sugar. So we're not talking today about type 1 diabetes. That's a different segment. But type 2 diabetes is what we're talking about. And type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes, but now it's onsetting in young children. And so we no longer call it that. It's now called type 2 diabetes. And that is a situation where we either are not producing enough insulin, our pancreases are kind of worn out, if you would, or the insulin that is produced, our bodies have just grown desensitized to it, and so we're no longer utilizing the insulin. We don't have a response to it that we used to have.
Desensitized, why? I mean, it's not an aging issue, is it?
No, that's a great question, Neil. It's really a production issue. What happens in the body, the brain is very sensitive to how much sugar is in our blood, and it has regulators, and it's always sampling the blood sugar. And when we eat either a whole lot of food or we eat food that turns into sugar molecules very quickly, which is either a sugar product, a fruit product, or, you know, orange juice, if you would, or even white rice or white pasta, those things turn into sugar right away. And that begins to spike our blood sugar at a rapid rate, and our brain gets nervous about that, and it taps the pancreas and says, hey, produce some insulin and get this blood sugar down. And when it does that excessively, Neil, day in and day out, meal in, meal out, it produces excessive amounts of insulin because the brain doesn't really know where that spike's going to stop. So it says, hey, throw a ton of it on. And what happens over time, just like a child who's calling his mom's name all day long, mommy, 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 the mom can just tune it out by 4 p.m. I think that's what's going on now with our bodies. So there's so much insulin in circulation that we no longer are sensitive to what's there.
Hmm. By the way, we're going to take your calls today, and it's an hour where you can get your questions answered, particularly about this health issue. And you may have some questions about how to treat, or family member you're concerned about, or warning signs, all those kinds of things. We'll deal with that, but love to have you join the conversation. The phone number is 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or you can connect with us online if that's more convenient. You can just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, so you can submit your question or your comment that way as well if that works better for you. And happy to have you join the conversation today as we talk about getting healthy, and particularly as we look at this this serious concern of diabetes. One of the things I was noting in the World Health Organization said that this disease is particularly damaging for low- and middle-income individuals and countries. I'm wondering, is there a reason that why this demographic is more susceptible?
Well, there's a number of reasons, Neil. One would be that oftentimes these are hardworking people who are not going to have a whole lot of time to be planning these nutritious meals. And so we're going to pick up things that are quick to eat, or if we're talking about low income, that are inexpensive. And the least expensive foods are going to be things that are white flour produced foods or volumes of foods like white rice that will fill us up, white bread, white pasta, and not cost a whole lot. And so insulin resistance and diabetes and prediabetes, all of those things are going to stem from a diet that's high in those types of food. The other thing is sometimes with low-income people, we're not going to have as much access to health care and maybe as much access to even the knowledge of what's good for our bodies to consume and what's not.
You know, when you mention white rice, I mean, that's not a sugar, right? So why would that be a problem?
Yeah, Neil, white rice is sugar because as soon as you're chewing it in your mouth, it's turning its starch molecules into sugar molecules. As is white pasta and white bread and hamburger rolls and white potatoes, all of those things that we eat turn into sugar molecules even before they're making their way down our throat into our stomachs. And so if you visualize those white food products as marshmallows, you might want to stay away from those things because that is going to spike our blood sugar really high. We're going to dump a whole lot of insulin into our bloodstream. And we're going to tire out our pancreas, and we're going to desensitize the insulin receptors in our bodies, which are found in our muscles, our fat cells, and our liver cells.
So if those receptors, as you say, get desensitized, then we don't have the immunization sort of capability to counteract when we do have a spike. Is that what you're saying?
Well, those receptors are kind of like locks, if you would, in storage units for sugar. And so our body doesn't just get rid of the sugar that's excessive in our bloodstream. It stores it away for a later time. And so we have these storage cells, if you would, in your muscles, in your liver, and in your fat cells. And when insulin is in the bloodstream, it does two things. It changes sugar molecules into a storage form of sugar called glycogen, and then it takes that and unlocks these storage units and stores that glycogen away for later use. So if you have, you wake up in the morning and you skip breakfast, but you still need physical energy through the day, there's another hormone in the body that can then unlock those storage units, get out that stored sugar, and give you energy for that time of your day.
Speaking of breakfast, Kay from Fargo just called in, and she says, Pop-Tarts for breakfast and sugar cereal. What are Lisa's insights on these?
I think she was looking at how I grew up. Growing up in my home, we had a shelf full of 10 boxes of sugared cereals, and we did not just pick one of those meals. We picked all of them, and we made like sand art in our breakfast bowls. And that is oftentimes how kids are eating breakfast, or even adults are eating breakfast. And so we're starting our day with a sugar spike that is going to jolt our pancreas into action, and it's going to raise our blood sugar really high. But let me tell you, Neil, having a big glass of orange juice is going to do the same thing. And so you might think that you're doing yourself a real great service in the morning by having orange juice with your breakfast, but you're spiking your sugars just as much as if you had frosted mini wheats.
Well, that's it's just getting disappointing now, Lisa. We're doing so well. And now, so you mentioned orange juice. I think earlier you were saying fruit. So is it like having an orange for breakfast or a grapefruit? Is that an issue too, or a grape?
Well, here's the thing, Neil. When you have an orange, you're eating all of the fiber of the orange with the juice. That's how God created our bodies to be able to eat fruit in a safe way. And so in the Garden of Eden, there was fruit trees. There were not juice bars. But now we're just squeezing juice, and we're just drinking juice. And if you know anything about type 1 diabetics, if they start, their sugar starts to go very low and they're about to pass out, the thing you give them to jolt their blood sugar up is a glass of orange juice. And so we don't need to do that to ourselves. We don't need that sugar jolt in the morning. So absolutely, eat a full orange. If you're going to eat a banana, eat half of the banana and smear it with some peanut butter. Take that fat and that protein of the peanut butter and partner it with the fructose, which is fruit sugar, so we don't spike our blood sugars. When foods are paired and partnered like that, we have a great protective mechanism there.
A simple thing to do, pair and partner your food intake. Does it matter in terms of the sequence of eating it? If you eat your fruit first, or your cereal first, or that sort of thing?
It doesn't. It's just that it's in the same meal. So it's in the same stomach full, if you will.
Okay.
So in my book, Diabetes, Are You at Risk? What I teach people is that insulin resistance, which leads to prediabetes, which leads to diabetes and heart disease and other cancers, and we'll get into that later probably. But insulin resistance comes from eating carbohydrates excessively or by themselves. And so even good carbohydrates are going to spike our blood sugars to a degree. And so every time you want to eat a carb, which is either a bread product or a rice product, or you're going to eat a sugar product, that could be fruit, it could be sugared cereal, you do want to add a fat or a protein to it so that our digestion slows and all of that sugar is not released en masse into the bloodstream.
And that's what a fat or protein will do. It will slow down the digestion.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. All right, well, hopefully we're not messing up people's lunch, but it is an important conversation. We're talking with Lisa Barone, physical therapist, professor, and best-selling author. She's written several books that relate to our conversation today. Diabetes, Are You at Risk? Overcoming Eating, It's Not What You Eat, It's What Eats You. She's also written about back and neck pain, about sleeping well, and one of her latest, Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake. That's really at the heart of her work as a therapist, and she is lives in New York where she with her husband and children, and graduate of PT training in New York State, and she's a regular on the morning show with Dr. Bill Meyer, and we're happy to have her with us here on Connecting Faith. Again, it's open phone today, and you can ask your questions. We talk better health with Lisa Marone. Join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And more in just a moment. Today about being healthy, getting healthy, for heaven's sake. And we're talking steps to living strong, loving God, and serving others with Lisa Marone, who is a regular on the morning show, Dr. Bill Meyer. If you haven't had a chance to listen to her each and every, I think it's every other Monday, I encourage you to make that a regular listening experience. She's a physical therapist, a professor, a speaker, who encourages people to get healthy for heaven's sake. And she's authored a number of books, including Diabetes, Are You at Risk?, Overcoming Eating, It's Not What You Eat, It's What Eats You. And we're talking today about the ways that we can really invest in our health to enjoy life for years to come, as God designed. Chris had called in from Maple Grove. He says, I have type 2 diabetes. What can I do to lower this? We've sort of touched on that, but maybe is there a kind of a snapshot summary you could give to Chris?
Oh, absolutely, Chris. This is a 1-2 punch. It's diet and it's exercise. I'm a physical therapist. I do not throwing this in just because I'm a physical therapist, but I've been mentioning this morning, or this afternoon, I guess it is, that there are insulin receptors in your muscle cells. And when you exercise, they do not know why, but they do know for a fact that when you exercise, you increase the sensitivity of the insulin receptors in your muscles. And so your muscles are better able to store away sugars. And so, Neil, you had asked earlier, you know, lower-income and middle-income families, those hardworking families oftentimes are working so hard they don't have time to be doing physical exercise. And their children oftentimes might be at home because their parents are working and they're sitting in front of the TV and they're more sedentary. And so if you already have type 2 diabetes, if you have early stages type 2 diabetes, you can actually reverse your diabetes and send it back into the land of pre-diabetes through diet and exercise. And in fact, diet and exercise, Neil, has been shown to give us 7 years better health than going on metformin, which is the drug of choice when you're in the pre-diabetic stage and then in your diabetes. And so diet and exercise is far more powerful than medicine in reversing and maintaining better sugar levels.
Well, we need to be reminded of that and know that there are some real benefits on the other side of that. I'm wondering, is this cumulative? I mean, does your body sort of just, you know, build up if you are kind of, I guess, abusing it by not eating right year after year? I mean, that there's a point where the body says that's enough, right?
Well, primarily it is lifestyle, but secondarily it is genetics. So our lifestyle will bring us from healthy into a state of insulin resistance, into a state of pre-diabetes. But our genetics are going to decide whether we go from pre-diabetes into full-blown diabetes. And they believe that about 60 to 80% of people who are pre-diabetic will eventually, within about a decade, become diabetic. But that's going to depend upon your genetics. Did one of your parents have type 2 diabetes? Does one of your siblings have type 2 diabetes? That's what's going to dictate that.
Are there so when we go for a checkup at the doctor, is a blood test going to give us some indication that we are at risk for this?
Absolutely. First, before you even get into your doctor's office, if you feel like you're thirsty all the time, you're urinating very frequently, and I mean more than 8 times a day, if you're sporting a whole bunch of belly fat, then you're probably more at risk. So you do want to get to your doctor's office and have that checked out. Now, in your doctor's office, there's 2 tests. There's one that every doctor is going to give in terms of their total blood panel. It's called a fasting glucose test. After 12 hours of fasting, you take this test, and it tells you are your blood sugar levels high, because, Neil, this is how our body works. When we eat a meal, our blood sugar levels naturally rise. They rise for about 2 to 3 hours until insulin has its effect, and they come back down to normal. Normal is below 99 milligrams per deciliter of blood. Now, when you are getting to the point of diabetes, it takes your body 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours. That's not good metabolism. But when you take a fasting glucose test and you've waited 12 hours, that's telling you you're really bad off because you've not been able to clear the blood in 12 hours. The better test out there, probably about half of the doctors are giving this test now. It's called an A1C test. It's a capital A, number one, capital C test. And what that does is it gives you an understanding of how well you regulated your blood sugar 24 hours, 7 days a week for the past 3 months. And that can give us a much more accurate window as to how well we're metabolizing our blood sugar a full 7 to 10 years before your fasting glucose test ever comes back positive.
Just thinking, as you're talking about that, taking, you know, body takes a long time to recover. So if we know we're going to, it's a holiday or it's a birthday party, we know that we're probably not going to be eating like we normally do. We should just, I guess, know that what we eat after that excess is going to be important, right? That we pull back or we give our body time to recover from that.
It is. I believe that we need to eat well most of the time. I think we always need
I was hoping you wouldn't go there, but I guess that's, you know, if you're, you know, you are a physical therapist, so I suppose we have to expect that. No, I'm just kidding.
But, you know, but we need to have that leeway to not eat well every once in a while. You need to be able to eat sugared foods, and you need to be able to eat fatty foods, and the nutritionists out there are probably turning me off right now. But I believe that that's natural. But so if we eat well most of the time, we should be okay. Now, what I do when I know it's a holiday or a birthday, I still am mindful of the fact of how much I'm going to eat. A celebration doesn't mean you need to eat excessively to the point of being so full that you're unbuttoning your pants. So we can celebrate and still enjoy it in moderation. If I want to have a piece of cake and that looks so good, maybe I'll take one and I'll eat a few bites of it, but I won't finish it off because I know that that's not celebratory within my body. And I know that I look at that and say, hey, how can I worship God today? Maybe I won't eat this whole piece of cake. And I say, Lord, I'm doing this in your honor. So I play some mind games with myself to help me, even in those times, to kind of keep myself a little bit in order.
Well, we're getting good advice because Lisa Marone's heart and passion is for us to get healthy for heaven's sake. And that's the title of one of her books called 7 Steps to Living Strong, Loving God, and Serving Others. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. We're talking specifically about diabetes today and about, some issues with overeating. So you can give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll have more with physical therapist, professor, and author Lisa Marone in a moment. We'll take your calls here in the second half of the show. We're going to talk particularly about children and diabetes as well. So if you have some questions about that, about better health, join us at 877-93-FAITH.
Sugar.
Talking my language there, Ted. We're talking better health today. It's World Health Day today. The focus of World Health Day is on diabetes this year, and so we're spending some time with Lisa Marone getting a perspective on that. She's written about it in her book, Diabetes, Are You at Risk? Also related is overcoming overeating. It's not what you eat, it's what eats you. Lisa's a physical therapist, a professor, and a speaker, and has been working with people to help resolve physical pain, overcoming overeating, protecting against reversing diabetes, other life-robbing diseases as well, through her 20-plus years in the healthcare field. And she's joining us today on Connecting Faith. Our phone number is 877-933-2484. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you chime in. If this is an area of concern for you or maybe someone in your family, someone that you love. And Lisa, we haven't really touched on children specifically, but it seems like we're hearing that, you know, there are some real risks for children. I mean, even though type 2 is something that's not just kids anymore, but that we should say a word about how we can help our kids not be going down this path.
Yeah, when I was writing this book, I was speaking with my children's pediatrician at the time. And she said, Lisa, you would be surprised how many two-year-olds I have in my office who are already insulin resistant. And that's because right now in the United States, one out of every three kids from the age of 2 to the age of 19 is either overweight or obese. That's a third of our young people. This is going to be a huge problem, and I don't mean that by the pun. I mean it's going to be a very large issue for us. And so we need to look at our children's lifestyles, and we need to do right by them. We really need our kids to be physically active. We need to help them to make good choices with their foods. We can't just say, here's some Ritz crackers, honey, and grape juice, because both of those things are feeding the insulin resistance in their bodies. And so it's so critical that we look at our children and we start to invest in them.
So maybe just some simple things like even an after-school snack or even packing lunch, what would you recommend? What could we do differently?
Yeah, I'm thinking we need to have a lot more protein in our kids' diets, and we also need to have a lot of good fat in their diets. And so I used to send my kids before I knew it, you know, when they were little, off to school with their lunch boxes, and they had, you know, chips, and they had crackers, and they had cookies and things like that. But rather, they should have a hard-boiled egg, a cheese stick, a half an avocado, a little bag full of nuts, things that are going to digest slowly. See, fat and protein, they barely disturb our blood sugar level. But carbohydrates, they really do us in. And so it's really important from the time your kids get up in the morning, get up, get them something to eat that's going to really be slow to digest in their bodies. Don't give them quick things like Pop-Tarts and send them out the door.
I'm just curious, too, should we be eating more meals more regularly as opposed to sort of having a large meal, one or two times a day? Does that make any difference?
You know, it's difficult for children to do that because they don't have that option in school. You know, there's breakfast when they're home, there's lunchtime and afterwards. But as adults, or when your kids are home with you, it is better to keep your blood sugar regulated by having a mid-morning snack and a mid-afternoon snack. That also helps us not to be ravenous when it comes time for lunch or dinner and overeat. And so we'll keep our blood sugars more regular. But again, I have friends who say, but isn't it great? I eat like, you know, 6 strawberries in the middle of the morning. And I said, well, that's really kind of great because strawberries are nice for you, but they are fructose. They are sugar. And so unless you eat a handful of almonds with them, you're spiking your blood sugar. And so pay attention to how you're snacking. If you're not just having a pure protein or a pure fat, sometimes I'll grab a half an avocado as a snack. That's a fat. If you're eating a carb, sugared fruit, or anything like that, you want to be partnering that with a protein or with a healthy fat.
So my yogurt and strawberries that I'm going to have after the show today, I should probably have something else with that, right? Even though
yogurt, Neil, is a Greek yogurt, and it has a lot of protein in it,
yeah,
you're good to go.
Okay. Oh, good. All right.
Golden.
I needed a little positive encouragement there, Lisa. Thank you for that. You know, this we talked about children, but this the risk of diabetes has impact on other diseases as well, right? To say a little bit about some of the links there.
Yeah. Insulin resistance actually is one of 5 elements of a disease process in our body called metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome, while you've never heard of it, you've probably heard of a number of the 5 factors. One is high cholesterol. The other is high blood pressure. The third is insulin resistance. The fourth is elevated inflammation within the body. And the fifth is increased clotting factor, like within our vessels. And so when we talk about heart disease, insulin resistance and this metabolic syndrome, they have cardiologists have suggested that potentially up to 40% of heart attacks have happened because of insulin resistance alone. And so it's really critical that for cardiovascular health, we're eating well and that we're exercising well. Also, Neil, you mentioned cancers. there are certain cancers that are inflammatory in nature, specifically breast cancer, colon cancer, endometrial cancer. And when we are insulin resistant, we actually have that pro-inflammation set up in our bodies, and we feed those cancer formations. And so it's really critical, you know, for our overall health that we're looking at this situation carefully, and we're going to make some steps to change because, Neil, you mentioned it before, the whole reason I'm talking about this is longevity is a great thing, but longevity spent well so that we can serve our king is an awesome thing. And so we want to do these things in our bodies not just so that we can feel well and live longer. We want to serve God. We want to be able to do all the things that he's called us to do, every single last task that he had in mind for us to do, and we want to be vibrant and well to do that. And so that's why I look at restoring our health as a form of worship and a way of loving God with our physical wellness.
And as you said earlier, in terms of restoration, you can reverse this. And I think you said, you can get 7 years better health. I mean, that's a pretty startling statistic in today's high health care costs, the world that we live in.
It is. Who wouldn't want 7 more years of good health? So when I know a lot of people would just rather take a pill, or I'd rather take a pill than lose weight and exercise. But if you take a pill, you end up with diabetes in 3 years. But if you diet and exercise, you might end up with diabetes in 11 years, a whole decade later. So that's a whole lot better. So, and you may even be in that large percentage that actually reverses it, and you never end up in diabetes, or you've got the great genetics that never produces that. But here's the thing, Neil. If you pre-diabetic, that's not a pass. It's not like pre-kindergarten, you know, where you're really not doing anything. In pre-diabetic stage, our body is already churning out disease problems. And so they've found in the pre-diabetic person that they're having silent strokes that they're unaware of. They've noticed silent heart attacks, pieces of the heart wall that are permanently damaged because of those clotting factors of insulin resistance. And so it's not just safe. You can't just say, okay, well, I'm pre-diabetic. I'll wait until I have diabetes to get serious. Get serious now. Your health's at stake now in the pre-diabetic or insulin-resistant stages.
Well, as you were, I think, responding to Chris's question about how to lower it, you said diet and exercise. Let's maybe talk a little bit more about that, what that looks like. I mean, exercise is a word that gets, you know, kind of thrown around a lot, and we think with childhood obesity as well, that kids need to be active, so is activity equaling exercise?
Activity equals exercise as long as your heart rate is elevated to the point where your breathing is a little labored. And so strolling down the block with your friend talking like you would at the same volume and ease across the kitchen table is not exercise. That's a stroll. Exercise is something that's going to increase your heart rate so that you're huffing and puffing a little bit if you were having a conversation with a friend. Now, it could be traditional, like walking, jogging, biking, but it could be out in your yard raking. It could be mopping your floor at a double time speed. It could be anything where you're even shopping in a big box store and you're pushing your cart at a pretty good rate instead of strolling through it. So anything that raises our heart rate where we feel a little breathless, that's exercise. And, Neil, the prescription for that has remained the same for quite some time. It's we need 150 minutes a week to get health benefits out of it. But it doesn't matter how you divvy that up. So if you only have off one day a week, you can still get that in. By exercising or going on a hike for 2.5 hours, you're golden then, too.
Yeah, so that is basically 2.5 hours a week, right, that we need to... I mean, if we're looking at minimums, and I am, what's the least I can do, Lisa?
I'm busy also, Neil. So when I'm lifting weights, I lift weights really fast at the gym, so my heart rate goes up, and I count that into my minutes.
Okay.
Because that's not your traditional cardiovascular exercise, but it can even be made to be that. So that is important. One thing that we didn't mention that I think needs mentioning, we talked about diet, and we talked about exercise, but here's a really surprising thing. Is that when we don't get enough sleep at night, we actually can produce some insulin resistance in our bodies. And so we need to strive for 7 to 8 hours of sleep because that also is going to help our bodies produce the amount of insulin from its pancreas and protect ourselves from insulin resistance.
I was just thinking, I was talking to my mother last night, in fact, and we've had conversations sometimes about, you know, just can't sleep, can't get to sleep. I mean, that's kind of a common issue for a lot of people, waking up early. And others, of course, maybe just kind of burning the candle on both ends. So is it kind of sort of self-fulfilling? I suppose the less sleep we get, maybe the less healthy we are, which maybe means we don't sleep as well.
Well, here's what science has discovered, that sleep is the most important predictor for how long you will live. It is not your body weight. It's not whether you smoke or not. It's how much you sleep you get. And so sleep is going to impact every part of our health. And so I tell people, listen, if you're overweight, the first thing you want to do is make sure you're getting a good night's sleep, because that's going to affect your body weight, and it's going to affect your insulin resistance. And so I always have everybody start there. Sleep is the most overlooked. It's pushed aside. We do burn the candle at both ends. We try to jam as much as we can. And I really believe that God has created our bodies so that we're supposed to sleep for a third of our days, and we're supposed to rest for one-seventh of our week. And he has built that into our humanity because that's how we function best. And when we squeeze out our Sabbath day or we squeeze out our nighttime sleep, we're going to suffer for it, and we're going to lose years at the end of our lives.
Wise words from Lisa Marone. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. I'm going to take a quick nap during this break. I hope that you will take a moment to give us a call and join the conversation. We're talking about getting healthy, for heaven's sake. That's the title of Lisa's latest book, Seven Steps to Live Strong, Loving God, and Serving Others. So also talking about her other books, Diabetes, Are You at Risk? And in a moment, we'll talk a little bit more about her book, Overcoming Overeating. It's not what you eat, it's what eats you, as we focus a little bit more on diet. And also want to get to some warning signs. Maybe there's someone that is having a insulin incident. So what do we do? How do we prepare for that? Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, author, speaker, joining us today in Connecting Faith. Love to have you join us as well. 877-93-FAITH.
And anything but usual. We know that there's no such thing as impossible.
Today is World Health Day, designated by the World Health Organization. And their focus this year is on beating diabetes. And they're talking about how we can reduce our risk. We can better our health. Very practical, helpful ways, and for the reason of not only because we want to live longer and stronger, but as Lisa Marone says, we get healthy for heaven's sake, steps to living strong, loving God, and serving others. Lisa's physical therapist and professor, a speaker who encourages people to get healthy for heaven's sake. She's authored several books, including Diabetes, Are You at Risk? Overcoming Eating, It's Not What You Eat, It's What Eats You. And we talked a little bit about diet, Lisa, but I'm just thinking, you know, when it comes to diet, we all there's oftentimes more to it than just the kinds of foods we eat. We maybe are eating because it's there are some emotional issues as well.
Yes, absolutely. I wrote Overcoming Overeating because I was getting very frustrated that every January I would see in the big box stores a huge stack of new diet books. And I thought, you know what? We're completely missing the mark here. It's as if you had a house and you had rotten walls and you kept putting new windows in every year and you wondered why they fell out in a few months. And what's going on with our diet is not that we need to know what to eat or what not to eat or how to measure and weigh our food. We need to figure out why are we overeating. And for some of us, we're overeating simply out of boredom. Some people are overeating out of stress. Some people are reading a newspaper while they're eating dinner, and they have no idea how much food they've consumed because they're, you know, knee-deep in a story. But other people are overeating because it's a way to manage their emotions. And so I felt that there was a lot of emotional baggage that I came into my adulthood with that I needed God's help in processing through. And I felt that it was perfectly applicable to how do we identify the things that drive overeating in our lives, and then how do we, not only once we know about them, how do we heal from those things? They could be things from the past. You may have had a childhood that was really destructive. You may have a present that's really stressful, or you may have a future that you're very anxious about. But there's something there that needs to be brought under the command of the Lord Jesus Christ and healed, so that when we go forward, any diet plan will work for us because we have a healthy relationship with food. And so that's what that book is all about.
Jim in Fargo wants to know what you think about sugar substitutes such as Splenda.
That is a great question. The scientific jury is kind of out on that. But what it seems to be leaning towards is that artificial sweeteners are creating a taste for highly sweet things in our palate, and so that we're not satisfied with regular sweets. And so while there's certain diet plans that say Splenda is a great thing to use, I believe that anything that's chemically created in a lab should be something that's pretty much avoided. And so God has created things in nature for us, and if we can use those things in moderation, we're going to be better off than having to sweeten our foods with something that someone created in the lab. You know, it always seems that 10 years down the line, Neil, we go, oh, don't eat this. It actually causes cancer. We said it was good for 10 years, but now it's actually not. So I think it's best to stay away from those things. And there's been studies done that people who eat artificially sweetened, like, say, diet sodas, that they actually are more overweight and obese than people who would eat drink regular sodas. And so I think something is going on, and it's a craving, a sweet craving that those things are developing within us.
Let's take Eric's call. Eric's calling in from Bemidji and has a question about heart rate. Eric, you're on with Lisa Marone. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Boy, we could talk a long time here, but I'm just kind of chuckling. I could save the medical community billions of dollars on research, because I think one of the primary causes of these health problems is turning 50.
Okay, sure.
Well, that's me next year, so I'm all ears.
Okay.
Well, anyway, yeah, all my health problems started at 50. I had a massive blood clot in my leg, columnized to the navel. I now have arthritis. I have I just have a dossier of things going on with me. But where we were going with the exercise and the heart rate thing is because I also have unstable angina, and you're talking about getting your heart rate up to like 150, I have to admit I get rather scared of that sort of thing. What would be your advice on that?
Okay, good question.
Yeah, first of all, if you have any kind of heart issue, your advice should come from your cardiologist, because he's going to know she's going to know what's safest for you. In terms of what I'm suggesting, it would be called a moderate heart rate. So it would be, you would take the number 220, you'd subtract your age from it, and then you would have that, about 50% of that. That would be enough heart rate to increase the respiratory rate, would make you a little bit breathless. So I'm certainly not telling people to push up high. I personally don't jog, run, do high-impact aerobics. Other people find that that's the way they like to exercise. But if you have cardiac issues, I would say go to your doctor, find out what's your safe zone, get yourself a Fitbit or something that's going to give you immediate feedback for your heart rate, and stay in that target zone. That's what's going to help. And you know what? You don't have to just be doing cardiovascular exercise. You can be doing squats and lunges and different exercises like that, which will also improve your ability to regulate your blood sugar. So it doesn't just have to be a cardiovascular exercise.
All right. Thanks, Eric, for that question. Randy in Waterloo wants to know, he says, I've been waking up in the middle of the night. What's the best thing to do?
Oh, boy. That is a rough question, because there are so many reasons why people wake up in the middle of the night. So let's just take a few of them. The first thing is people wake up in the middle of the night oftentimes because their bladder is full. And so it's really important that during the day we train our bladders to kind of last a little longer instead of using the bathroom every time we're near one. That helps us at night, and also not to be drinking fluids within 2 hours of going to sleep. Another thing that wakes people in the middle of the night is emotional issues. And so whatever you're not dealing with during the day is going to come knocking at your door in the middle of the night. And so it's really important that the thing that's on your mind when you wake up, that you make note of that and you begin to deal with that issue. And whether it's something that's really heavy where you need psychological intervention or pastoral counseling, or if it's just something that you need to be working out with the Lord. For me, when I wake up in the middle of the night, the first thing I do is I start praying, because I feel like, you know what, hey, if for whatever reason I've been woken up right now, I'm going to use the time for good. And oftentimes, prayer is very much like meditation. It's very restful. And so it does rest our minds and train us away from things that might be niggling at us. And so not only do we get put back to sleep, but we've done some kingdom work in the process.
Yeah, that's a good word. Lisa, we've got a few minutes left here before our time is gone. Just want to say maybe a word about warning signs, that maybe if we see someone that we've been talking about diabetes, if someone that actually has some insulin shock or something, are there some warning signs, things we should be aware of maybe for ourselves and then in others?
Yeah, well, here's some things that are kind of interesting about diabetes is that if you are a woman and you, during pregnancy, you had gestational diabetes, or you gave birth to a child who is nine pounds or over, you're a much greater risk of diabetes when you get older. Also, if you have a woman who is suffering with polycystic ovarian syndrome, you also have a higher risk of diabetes. And so, and for men, if you're struggling with erectile dysfunction, that also could be a sign. And so if you have increased urination frequency during the day, if you're always thirsty, you can't get enough to drink, you're thirsty, 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 what your body is doing is it's trying to liquidate the sugar in your bloodstream. And so if it's not medication-mediated, which could make you thirsty, it's going to be really important that you take a look at a visit to your doctor to take a look at what your blood sugar levels are like.
And if we see someone that, I think you mentioned just a glass of orange juice, one of the best things for someone that might be in shock, right?
If you see someone, if you know someone who has typically this happens with type 1 diabetics.
Okay.
If you see someone who is all of a sudden starting to look sleepy, or even I have a girlfriend who gets very giggly when her sugar goes low, if they start to act odd or they start to pass out, you're looking for to get sugar in them as quickly as possible. If they are awake, you're giving them sips of orange juice. I always tell people, if you have a friend who's a type 1 diabetic, please ask them ahead of time, hey, where on you do you keep your glucose tabs, or sometimes people carry glucose gel that you can, if they did pass out, actually rub in their mouth along their cheeks and in their gum line to bring them back. And so I always, when I'm teaching my class of students, I always say, hey, anybody in here type 1 diabetic? If someone raises their hand, I want to know that, or my patients as well.
Good. All right, we've been talking type 2 diabetes, but some general overall health advice, wise advice as always, from Lisa Marone, who is passionate about helping us get healthy for heaven's sake. She's written several books, Diabetes, Are You at Risk?, Overcoming Eating, It's Not What You Eat, It's What Eats You, and on Sleep Well Again. You can find those books at major bookstores or Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you want to find out more about the good work that Lisa does as a physical therapist and her speaking and teaching, you can go to lisamarone.com. That's M-O-R-R-O-N-E, lisamarone.com. And make the connection. And I hope that you will listen regularly on the morning show. Dr. Bill Meyer, Lisa's on every other week, giving wise advice. And Lisa, always glad to be able to carve out a little bit of time with you. And it was a good conversation again today.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me into World Health Day with you.
All right. It's World Health Day today. We wish you good health so that you can live a life that honors the Lord. Live strong, love God, serve others. Get healthy, for heaven's sake. Lisa Marone joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the program, maybe you want to share it with a friend, because all our information is shareable online. We post our interviews on the show page after the show. You go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. And there you'll find this interview and others as well. And they're all shareable, so pass them on to a friend. And thanks for joining us today on the Connecting Faith, and a special welcome to our friends in Hartford on the new Faith 1290.